Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If you are a regular listener, why not plan to visit Beth Emmanuel in beautiful Hudson, Wisconsin for one of the holidays? Join us in the fall for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, or Sukkot, or come visit in the springtime and spend Passover or Shavuot with us. All the holidays are special at Beth Emmanuel. You can contact us to request details by clicking on the Contact tab on our website. And remember to support Beth Emmanuel with your prayers and financial gifts.
Chag Sameach, Hoshana, Happy Passover. This is a Sabbath address for the community of Beth Emmanuel, pre-recorded for Nisan 15, 57, 75, which corresponds to April 4, 2015, the first day of Passover. It's going to be an amazing year, an amazing Passover. How often does it happen that the days of the week correspond to the days of the Passover week reported in the Gospels? We read in the Gospels that our Master died on a Friday, the preparation day, and in the Gospel of John, it says that it was the day of the Passover sacrifice. This only happens when Erev Pesach falls on Friday, as it did this year. We read in the Gospels that our Master rose after the Sabbath on the first day of the week. So, the night after the Sabbath, Saturday night, we have the opportunity to celebrate the resurrection according to the timing reported in the Gospels. And what is more, the first day of the week is also the first day of the counting of the Omer, just as it happened in the year of our Master's suffering, when the first day of the Omer fell on the first day of the week. It's a rare thing, and extremely special convergence of the holy day of Passover and the holy Sabbath. It only happens like this when the first Yom Tov of Passover falls on the Shabbat. It's amazing. That's the situation this year. I wish it was like this every year because it makes it so much easier to understand and reenact the story of the Master's suffering and his rising and so forth. And what's more, only when the calendar is aligned this way, as it happens this year, do we find that the Christian calendar, at least the Western one, aligns with the Jewish calendar. Ordinarily, the church counts the 50 days until Pentecost, beginning on Easter Sunday, instead of beginning on Nisan 16. But this year, Nisan 16 is Easter Sunday, so the Karaites and the Christians will finally get the counting of the Omer right, at least this year. And this is the way it happened in the year that the Master died. I was thinking about the amazing convergence of the first day of Passover and Sabbath. Ordinarily, on Friday night, to welcome the Sabbath, we recite Kiddush over a cup of wine, and we distribute two loaves of challah bread, the wine and the bread, the wine and the bread, every Friday night. Likewise, on the first night of Passover, at the Seder meal, we begin with the recitation of the Kiddush, reciting Kiddush over a cup of wine, and then, later in the meal, we recite the blessing for bread over the matzah, the unleavened bread. And I was thinking about this symbolism, in light of the convergence of the Sabbath and the first day of Passover, and I had a thought. First, I need to begin by talking to you about the concept of the symbolism of matzah. All right. In Messianic Judaism, it seems that chametz, the word chametz means leavened things, you know, products with the five grains and leavening and some that have been exposed to moisture and so forth. Anyway, chametz, it seems in Messianic Judaism that chametz and leaven itself, leavened things and leaven itself, that these are synonymous with sin. According to this symbolism, leaven and chametz, which are not the same thing, but leaven and chametz symbolize sin, and unleavened bread therefore symbolizes the absence of sin. All right. Simple enough to understand, simple symbolism, chametz, leaven, that's sin, matzah, no sin. Where does this interpretation come from? Well, it's based on 1 Corinthians chapter 5. And anyway, it seems to make intuitive sense, because the Lord commands the children of Israel to cast the chametz out of their homes, and he severely censures any Jew who even has any chametz in his possession during the 7 days of Passover, the 7 days of unleavened bread. So it appears that the chametz and the leaven that makes dough into chametz must symbolize something fairly awful, such as sin, in order that God is so eager to get for us to get it out of our lives, right? And in 1 Corinthians 5, the oft-repeated Passover text where Paul makes reference to the leaven of malice and evil, this seems to buttress that idea, and he encourages the Corinthians to cleanse out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you really are, unleavened. And that we should celebrate the festival, he says, with the unleavened bread, the matzah of sincerity and truth. And this is a very worthy teaching of the Holy Apostle Paul. Probably a seasonal teaching, most likely. A Passover season was just around the corner when he was composing the epistle of 1 Corinthians, so the imagery was apropos to the point he was trying to make. But if we take a closer look at this passage, we see that Paul's metaphor in 1 Corinthians 5 does not mean to say that the leaven symbolizes sin. Instead, it symbolizes unrepentant sinners. He is using the casting out of the leaven imagery to call upon the Corinthian community to cast out from their midst the sexually immoral and other sinners who show no indication of penitence. They're not repenting at all. So he says, I am writing to you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of a brother if he is guilty of sexual immorality or greed or is an idolater, a reviler, a drunkard, or swindler. Not even to eat with such a one. So according to this, the leaven that leavens the whole lump, in 1 Corinthians 5, are the godless in the assembly, who masquerade as disciples and as believers. Paul concludes the talk with the words, "Purge the evil person from among you." So, what have we learned here? In this passage, chametz is not really symbolic of sin. It's symbolic of sinners. Why? Because of the principle taught by Yeshua, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. We become like the people that we are around. Water seeks the lowest level. Human beings seek the lowest common moral denominator. Paul did not want the Corinthians to tolerate the presence of unrepentant sinners in the midst of the assembly because he believed that their presence would have a corrosive influence on the whole community. So do you see the difference in interpretation here? Ordinarily, we teach that leaven symbolizes sin, but that's not Paul's point at all. He is saying that leaven symbolizes the corrosive influence of another person, and in this case, the sinner. It's a subtle difference, but an important one, because it helps us understand other places that leaven is used as a metaphor in the New Testament. For example, in Galatians chapter 5, verse 9, Paul repeats the master's teaching about leaven. He says, a little leaven leavens the whole batch, but this time he's not talking about sin or sinners. Instead, he is talking about the influence of other teachers. And he was warning the Galatians, saying, he says to them, you were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? This persuasion is not from him who calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. I have confidence in the Lord that you will take no other view than mine, and the one who is troubling you will bear the penalty, whoever he is. So, in this passage, the leaven that leavens the whole lump is the persuasion from this troublemaker, this teacher, that Paul is criticizing. This is the same way that our master used the symbolism when he said, beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of the Sadducees and the leaven of Herod. I want to show you something about that passage. Starting in Matthew 16:6, that's where we begin. It says that our master said to his disciples, he says to them, watch and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So we want to beware the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. But that's difficult to do. It's kind of hard to actually determine what is the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees, since the Pharisees and the Sadducees were like opposites. They're polar opposites in what they believe and how they behave. So what's the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? He says, beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees in Matthew 16:11. And then it goes on and says, then the disciples understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Okay, so the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees is the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. I understand the concern about the teaching of the Sadducees. I mean, they taught there is no immortal spirit or judgment or afterlife or resurrection from the dead. It was a corrosive teaching, and Yeshua warned us about the leaven of their teaching because it spreads. It wasn't sin, it was just a bad teaching. It was bad theology. So I understand why he warns us about the leaven of the Sadducees, the bad theology of the Sadducees. But what was it that the Pharisees were teaching that Yeshua wanted his disciples to be wary about? Because it seems like their teaching, they've got it right on all of these points. So I want to show you something else, Mark 8:15. In this version, he doesn't say the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. It says, he cautioned them saying, watch out, beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Okay, so that's different. I understand the concern about the leaven of Herod. The leaven of Herod the Great and his family, the Herodians, that's clearly collusion with Rome, materialism, syncretism, assimilation, godlessness, all of these things that we would refer to today as going secular, secularism. That's what it is to be a Herodian, a secular person. Again, he's not referring to the sin of Herod here, not specifically. Instead, he's warning his disciples about the corrosive influence of the Herodian family. But what was it that the Pharisees were teaching that Yeshua wanted his disciples to be wary about when he says, watch out, beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of the Herodians? Because those are like opposites. Many people in the church assume that the leaven of the Pharisees is Judaism. Like Yeshua was warning his disciples not to keep the Torah or Jewish tradition. You know, watch out for the leaven of Torah and Jewish tradition. When that's obviously not the case. I mean, we know that. So it's kind of a puzzle. What does he mean by the leaven of the Pharisees? I mean, I understand the leaven of the Sadducees to be their bad teaching. I understand the leaven of the Herodians to be their corrosive influence toward assimilation and secularization. But what is the leaven of the Pharisees? All right, we find the answer in Luke chapter 12. Here it says, he began to say to his disciples, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. It's not Judaism that he's warning them about. It's not Torah observance that he's warning them about. It's not Jewish tradition that he's warning them about. It's not the oral Torah that he's warning them about, all these things that you hear. Instead, it's very clear, the gospel says this very clearly, beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Now, I always assumed I understood hypocrisy. I mean, we usually define hypocrisy to be disingenuousness, saying one thing, yet doing another. That is, pretending to be religious in public when people are watching, but in private, you're a completely godless person. A friend of mine, Reb Sheldon, has corrected my view on hypocrisy. He points out that in most of the instances where the word is used in the New Testament, it does not imply any disingenuity at all. Rather, it implies showing off, using the performance of a mitzvah or act of righteousness, such as alms or prayer or fasting, as an opportunity to show off in front of men and impress them with your exalted piety. Therefore, they made their tzitzit long and their tefillin wide, and they announced their charity with trumpets, and they stood praying on the street corners to be seen by men, and they disfigured their faces to show others that they were fasting. And Yeshua said, I tell you the truth, they've all received their reward in full. And this type of ostentatious show-off religious behavior is influential. Yeshua called it hypocrisy, and he compared it to leaven because it spreads. It's not sin. It's the influence of that type of behavior which spreads, in this case, spreads through a religious community. All right. So all that I'm trying to do here is to prove to you that in the Bible, in the New Testament, leaven does not symbolize sin. Instead, it symbolizes a social influence or a teaching or anything at all that spreads through a community of people until a little leaven leavens the whole batch. I can't tell you how many Passover teachings I've given in previous years where I've made the statement that leaven and chametz symbolize sin, and therefore we cast it out to symbolize casting out sin, and therefore the unleavened bread, the matzah, symbolizes sinlessness. And you'll hear at the Seder meal that Yeshua took the matzah and he used matzah, unleavened bread, to symbolize his body because just as he is without sin, so too the matzah is without chametz, it's without leaven. And those are all good teachings, and I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying that they're only on the surface. And we're looking a little deeper. The Torah has 70 facets. Today, I'm showing you another facet. In the New Testament, leaven and chametz do not necessarily symbolize sin. For example, in one teaching of the Master, Matthew 13:33, leaven symbolizes the kingdom of heaven. It says he told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour till it was all leavened. In other words, the kingdom will spread and grow. The kingdom is influential. The teaching of the kingdom spreads from person to person. It grows until eventually the whole batch will be leavened with the kingdom, which is to say the kingdom will fill the earth and the messianic era will be universal. It will have arrived and everyone will be part of the kingdom. So again, leaven does not necessarily symbolize sin. It symbolizes something that spreads. You might make the argument that it symbolizes a social influence. In all of the examples that we've looked at, the leaven of the sinners in the Corinthian congregation, the leaven of the influencers in Galatia, the leaven of the Sadducees, the leaven of those secular Herodians, the leaven of those ostentatious Pharisees, and even the leaven of the kingdom of heaven, all of these could be described as a social influence. They are compared to leaven because like leaven in a batch of dough, it spreads through the whole batch until the whole batch carries the same effect. To make another identical batch, you only need to take a little bit of the already existing chametz, the already existing leaven batch, and use it as starter dough, and this leavening influence can pass from generation to generation. So in this regard, Yeshua and the apostles seem to speak of leaven as a social influence. And in that case, the unleavened bread of the festival of unleavened bread might be said to symbolize a break with the culture of Egypt. This is why I call it born-again bread. When the children of Israel left Egypt, they also left behind the culture of slavery and idolatry in which they had been mired. And the fresh batch, the unleavened bread, symbolized a new beginning, a break with the past, a new start, a new culture. So as we eat the unleavened bread at Passover, as we eat the matzah, we remember that we are not under the influence of the culture. We're not in Egypt anymore. We're not even under the influence of brothers and sisters who influence us towards sin. We're not under the influence of this current world. We're not under the influence of the exile. Or we're not under the influence of bad theology and bad teaching. Instead, we should celebrate the festival with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth, a new beginning, a new batch, the kingdom of heaven. But there's yet another facet that I'd like you to consider, and this is the role of unleavened bread in the ceremonies and rituals of the Holy Temple. In the last few Torah portions, Parshat Vayikra, Parshat Tzav, they've reminded us of this principle that all the breads and grain offerings and flour offerings offered up in the temple were to be unleavened. They were all matzah. Even the shoe bread, the bread of the presence, the lechem hapanim of the holy temple, which was changed out every week on Shabbat, even this holy Sabbath bread was unleavened. The only exception to that rule was the 2 loaves of leavened bread, the 2 loaves of chametz dik bread offered on the festival of Shavuot. We can see this in Leviticus chapter 2, beginning in verse 11, where it says, "No grain offering that you bring to Hashem shall be made with leaven, for you shall burn no leaven, nor any honey as a food offering to Hashem. As an offering of first fruits, you may bring them to Hashem, but they shall not be offered on the altar for a pleasing aroma. So, it turns out that it's always Passover in the temple, you could say. It's always always unleavened bread. In the temple, you never offer chametz. You never offer leavened bread. The Torah says you shall offer no leavened bread. And in fact, you can't even mix honey into the dough because honey will feed the natural leavening process, as anyone who has made bread knows. Sugars in the dough contribute to the natural leavening process. So by forbidding such sweeteners, the Torah means to ensure that the grain offerings are completely unleavened. And the only exception to this rule is the offering of first fruits. And the offering of first fruits refers to the two loaves of leavened bread that the priesthood offered in the temple on the day of Shavuot. It's the only time leavened bread is to be offered to the Lord, but even then, not on the altar. Well, what makes this offering of Shavuot different, by the way? Here's sort of an aside. Well, Shavuot comes as a conclusion to the festival of Passover. The counting of 50 days of the Omer connects it back to the beginning of Passover. So, Shavuot represents the completion of the process that began at Passover. And at Passover, we began with a new batch. The new creation, the new batch that began at Passover, breaking from the old culture, has come to full maturity by Shavuot. It's fully leavened, so the Torah imagines Passover, as it were, as a fresh batch of dough, which has not had any leaven introduced as starter dough from previous batches, nor has it had time to develop into a new culture by itself, a new leaven batch. Instead, it's a unleavened batch, a new batch, but by Shavuot, the process is complete. It's by Shavuot, it has become leavened. It's taken its own shape and identity. That's the symbolism that what began with the salvation of Passover comes to its culmination with the revelation at Sinai at Shavuot, and that's the Torah. So what have we learned thus far? We have learned that at Passover we celebrate our deliverance from the corrupting influence of this current world, the old batch. And at Shavuot we celebrate the success of the kingdom, the new batch. A transformation has occurred. And this idea, is similar to yet another facet of the mitzvah of the matzah. As I've already explained, all the grain offerings presented on the altar needed to be matzah. They all needed to be unleavened. The prohibition on placing chametz, leavened things, on the altar symbolizes the sanctuary's separation from physical corruption. I mean, think about it. How does leaven work? Leaven, you know, you add some leaven to some dough. How does it work? Leavening functions as a process of fermentation, and fermentation is really the same as decomposition. Here's a simple science experiment for you to try at home with the kids. Homeschool moms, listen up. Take a piece of normal chametzdik bread, not store-bought bread, but real bread, maybe homemade bread, without any additive preservatives, and also take a piece of matzah. Place them both side by side someplace in your home and leave them there. And then check back on them about 2 weeks later, and what will you discover? You're going to find that one of them has become moldy and putrefied, and one of them looks like it's good enough to eat. The matzah did not decompose. If it's kept dry, matzah will actually last for years. I don't know, maybe forever. Chametzdik bread quickly turns moldy, whereas matzah seems to resist mold and decay. And I believe that this is the reason that the Torah forbids chametz on the altar, but it accepts matzah, unleavened bread. This is why the bread of the presence, which needed to be changed out every Sabbath, was also unleavened. The priesthood ate it a week after it had been made. Legend says it was still fresh when they ate it. And this prohibition on corruption and decomposition applies not just to bread offerings, it applies across the board in the Holy Temple. The laws of the Holy Temple strictly avoid all types of putrefaction and decomposition because of their associations with death and mortality. For example, the construction of the sanctuary employed only resinous acacia and cedar woods. Why? Because they don't decay. Similarly, the meats of the animal sacrifices needed to be burned with fire if they had not been eaten by the third day after slaughter. Why? In order to prevent decomposition. Again, those who came into contact with a corpse or the carcass of an unclean animal needed to undergo ritual purification before they could enter the sanctuary or participate in the services. Why? Because the sanctuary, the temple of God, is a place of life, not death. The Levitical worship system of the Holy Temple teaches about the transformation from the perishable to the imperishable. And in this regard, the unleavened bread, the matzah bread, which was accepted on the altar, symbolizes the imperishable state. In other words, the matzah symbolizes immortality and the resurrection of the dead. According to this interpretation that I'm teaching you now, the leaven symbolizes not sin, but decay. Decay which spreads as a pervasive influence. It spreads through a body like leprosy until the whole of it is corrupted. Leprosy also, by the way, is something that's seriously forbidden from the temple. So decay spreads through the whole body until the whole thing is corrupted. So in this way, leaven and leavening symbolizes decomposition, impermanence, and the transitory state of things in this mortal existence. But the unleavened matzah bread symbolizes immortality, permanence, the resurrection, and the life of the world to come. We see this in Romans chapter 8. Paul says in Romans chapter 8, beginning in verse 18, he says, I consider that the sufferings of this present time, that's Olam Hazeh, this present world, are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us in the Olam Haba, in the world to come. For the whole creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. That's for the resurrection. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption, to decomposition, and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God, that is, the resurrected. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now, and not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit. We groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for the adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies, that's the resurrection. For in this hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. That's Romans 8, 18 to 25. Just as we await the resurrection of our mortal bodies, that they should be transformed through the resurrection into the imperishable state, so too all creation is longing for its resurrection, its recreation into the imperishable state, the immortal world to come. Then the creation will be set free from its bondage to corruption, and the resurrection of Yeshua of Nazareth, which took place during the festival of unleavened bread, during the 7 days of Passover, the resurrection of Yeshua of Nazareth is the first fruits of this future transformation. This transformation can also be illustrated in the form of the daily manna, which fell for the children of Israel after they left Egypt. See, when they ran out of matzah, the Lord fed the children of Israel with the bread of angels, the bread of heaven. But the manna had a problem. It had a short shelf life. It only lasted for a single day. It says, it bred worms and stank. This symbolizes human mortality. Like the daily manna, we are destined for worms. On the sixth day, however, Yom HaShishi, the Lord gave them manna for 2 days. The manna that they collected on Friday, the day of preparation, the preparation day, this manna did not decompose. Instead, it says, so they laid it aside till morning, as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink. And there were no worms in it. And Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today. The double portion of the Sabbath bread that we place on our tables every Friday night reminds us of this double portion of the Sabbath manna. It also reminds us of that unleavened Sabbath bread, the bread of the presence that the priests changed out on the Sabbath, imperishable bread. And this is the whole point that I was trying to make when I said that we have a special convergence this year when the first day of the Festival of Unleavened Bread, the Yom Tov of Pesach, falls on the Shabbat, and the matzah replaces our Friday challah. Then we take the matzah and remember the body of the Master in the bread, and we are remembering his body, which did not see decay, which did not see any decomposition. As it says in the psalm, in Psalm 16, it says, for you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, or let your Holy One see corruption. You make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. In this way, Passover and the Festival of Unleavened Bread, Chag HaMatzot, is all about the resurrection, when what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. And as we cast the chametz out, it symbolizes forsaking the things of this passing, fading, temporary world, and laying hold to the new batch, the resurrection, the resurrected one, and the world to come. Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.